Yeehaw!
Love that song.
I had to change it up a bit because I've been told that I do a little too much of the copying of the last phrase there. Yeah. All right.
Oh,
so we did it anyway.
I like that phrase.
It's cool.
Well, welcome to the Green Divas radio show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
Green Dude Paul.
Green Dude.
Take three.
No. We're going.
Lynn, we haven't seen you in a while. What have you not told us?
I'm transitioning over here.
That's hilarious. And then we also, so that's Green Diva Lynn, in case anybody didn't get that. We're too busy fooling around. We also have
Green Diva Amanda.
Amanda.
In training.
Green Diva
Amanda.
Training.
Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thanks.
And hi, Paul, and everybody else.
Hello.
Yeah, I don't get any hello.
Meg.
You, I talk to you all day.
I haven't had any sleep, so please.
No, be punchy.
Me.
It's more fun. So before we go any further, I want to just mention our fabulous sponsors who make all this possible, buygreen.com, which has the best green stuff for home and office, very great rating system, vigorous, you know,
high setting. Level of integrity.
Yeah, and, thank mm-hmm. you. And a good rating system that's understandable. And you can go there through the Green Divas Marketplace, which isn't fully set up, but there is a link, and you do get a discounted price if you go to go through us. So do it, people.
Support that green economy.
Let's go.
And then Smarty Marty's Rent-A-Rec, which don't let the name fool you, because we had one a couple weeks ago. It was a great little car. Never would have known it was used, even.
Never. Beautiful.
So, Smarty Marty's has several locations here in northern New Jersey, and he also has trucks to rent. So if you need to move or haul something, that's what you want to do. But if you go to thegreendivas.com, there's a banner in the sidebar for sure. Click on that and tell them the Green Divas sent you.
Smarty Marty.
So I just want to give a shout out to Lynn, who has put together this wonderful Green Diva in Training program, and proof that it is working beautifully with Amanda sitting here, who's been goofing around with me a bit this afternoon in the studio.
Yep, we've had fun.
Yeah, and I know you're attracting some good talent, Lynn. Keep doing it.
Oh, well, I so appreciate Amanda and Gail is another Green Diva in Training. I think she's going to be coming out in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes we'll have to have a little Green Diva retreat party.
Definitely.
So we have a super busy show today. I'm really thrilled that I got to interview Andrew Winston, whose recent book is The Big Pivot. And I had met Andrew out in Detroit. And he's a very interesting, very smart guy who's articulate and speaks a language that even I understand, because I think he's like a really smarty pants economist kind of guy.
Yeah, I saw him speak at the Institute for Sustainable Enterprise a few weeks back, and he's really, really just captivating.
Nice guy, though. Yeah. I mean, like, just the real deal.
Absolutely.
Then we have a couple of fun new segments.
Mm-hmm.
We have the What You Can Do segment, which is really so exciting to work with Jessica Aranella from the What You Can Do video series. Finally, because we've been working with her for a long time, Paul.
We're telling you what not to do. So.
So it was really fun to have Jessica, and the first few in this particular podcast series are all about water conservation, and they're really, really important, and she gives us some great statistics and ideas. Then, of course, the fun one, drum roll please, is the
bum, ba, bum.
Dun, 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 the eco-sexy. So,
yeah. I don't know. I guess that wasn't so sexy.
We had an awful lot of fun.
Leave that to the divas.
I'm not good at making those guys.
Don't make me cough.
Okay.
We had an awful lot of fun recording the opening for this one this week. That's sort of the fun part of our
fun.
That particular one was really, really silly and fun. I got to purr.
I know. I think that's it could almost be the best part about it.
Then we have a Green Diva DIY segment with Becky Streepy, who's talking about how to turn crappy art into a chalkboard.
Market for crappy
or
art.
No, crappy.
Crappy. And there's plenty of that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like a silly print that is just really kind of, you know, like hotel, you know what I'm
hotel
talking
lobby
about.
Stuff.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. You find
when Elvis Goes Green.
So repurpose.
Elvis
That's
Goes
great.
Green. Then we have a foodie file with Diana Rice, who is answering that question that frequently people get asked when they're when I've said I'm a vegetarian, people go, oh, how do you get enough protein? So she's doing a little myth busting there and helping us find, you know, easier ways to incorporate vegetable or plant-based proteins into our world. Yay!
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and her post is great. I'm in my grossed out by meat phase right now. And
yeah.
So it's really good for people that are thinking about going meatless.
And I forgot that we have our special My Earth 360, which isn't you today. It is Jody Stark, who is from the David Suzuki Foundation, and we're talking about World Oceans Day, which is this week, people. So pay attention, have fun, and stay
big
tuned.
Show.
Want to understand what climate change is really all about? Want to get the latest environmental news? Listen to the Green Divas My Earth 360 report and hear it all. From WTF to encouraging news and ways that you can take action for the Earth. This segment is sponsored by TrueGoods.com because shopping should be fun, not frightening. True Goods helps you make simple choices for healthier, safer, cleaner living. Tell truth, shop good at TrueGoods.com. Well, we have a very special My Earth 360 today. No Lynn today. Oh, boo-hoo, boo-hoo. But Lynn hooked us up with Jody Stark, who is the engagement a public engagement specialist for the David Suzuki Foundation, because this week we have World Oceans Day on June 8th. And I think it's important to talk about. So we wanted to talk to Jody while it's still timely. Hi, Jody.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thanks for taking the time last minute. It was a great idea on Lynn's part, but we'll miss her for the moment. So tell me a little bit about World Oceans Day. Is this the first one?
No, World Oceans Day has been happening informally, but also formally by the UN for many years.
Of course.
And it's really a time to highlight both our love for the ocean and the relationship that we have for our ocean, to honor the ocean on this day and to celebrate it, and to also recognize the challenges that are facing our oceans and how we can take action to protect it.
Exactly. And I'm thrilled. I have to say I've been ignorant. I might have heard of it in the last few years, but this is the first time I've really paid attention. So I'm really glad that, you know, we're all getting it, because we all need to pay attention. You know, there's that gigantic Pacific gyre, and I know there are other ones. And, you know, just every day there's some new image of marine mammal that's maimed by some hideous plastic or, you know, and there's so many bigger issues as well. So tell us a couple of things we can do to get active and participate in World Oceans Day.
Well, for World Oceans Day, the UN has a website, worldoceansday.org. And on the website, they have a whole bunch of ideas on whether if you want to host an event or if you want to attend an event, and then also some fun, you know, social media pieces that you can get involved with, selfies for the sea, they're calling it.
I saw that. That was so fun. I'm going to do one.
Yeah. And some ideas for teens to do stuff with them. The David Suzuki Foundation, we're doing something similar, and our focus is on Canada, but a lot of the content that we've developed is relevant also for any audience. And we have event kits. So if you wanted to host your own event, we have some ideas both for kids' events and adults' events. And it could be something so small as, you know, Netflix, for example, has a bunch of really great documentaries about the ocean. So getting a few friends together and watching, having a movie night, or having a sustainable seafood barbecue. So inviting your friends over and, you know, Oceans Day is on Sunday this year. So it's a good day to to have your friends and family over for a barbecue and choose sustainable seafood and bring people's attention to the fact that what we eat and our choices as consumers also affects the health of the oceans. So those event kits and our ideas are found on our website, which is www.davidsuzuki.org/Oceans Day.
Perfect. Yeah, I have small children. So I have my grandchildren live with us. My older children, you know, they get involved with whatever I do anyway.
Yeah.
But the little-
so we have an event kit special for kids that has all sorts of different craft ideas and you know, fun things that you can do with younger kids as well. That is engaging and also will teach them a few things about the oceans. So my favorite one is called a socktopus, where you take an old sock and convert it into a kind of a stuffed toy, stuffy of an octopus.
Oh, how fun!
Yeah, so I've been just waiting to get some kids together to do that myself.
Well, I have some here that, you know, we rent out for fun events.
Yeah.
Go play with all our friends. Well, I will try that, and I'll send you pictures if we accomplish it.
Yes, please do.
Aww. Well, thank you so much for taking the time and all the work that you do, and happy World Oceans Day.
Thank you. Thanks. And then just also on our website, just there's also, as much as we love to celebrate Oceans Day and recognize right. the importance of setting aside some time, to also remember that our daily activities
yes.
and our daily consuming
yes.
affects the health of the ocean, and right. that there are things that you can do every day to help protect the ocean, minimizing your plastic use, anything...
Yeah.
Reducing your carbon emissions, eating sustainable seafood, throwing out your cigarette butts. So many of those end up in the ocean. So.
Or just quitting, you know.
Or quitting, that too. But yeah, so acknowledging that our behaviors every day affect the health of the ocean, but to take a special time on this Sunday, on June 8th, to recognize the ocean, no matter where in the world, even if you're not on the coastline. Chances are you've either experienced the ocean or the river that you live nearby ends up by the emptying out into the ocean. So we're all connected to the ocean, and it's a good chance to think about our own behaviors and how it's all connected.
Perfect. I'm so glad you brought all that up, because that's true. It's like Earth Day. Every day should be
right,
World
exactly.
Oceans Day. We need to just help get the awareness out there, share it with your friends and family, and have fun doing it.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon, I hope, Jody.
Okay. Sounds great.
Get all the details from this Green Divas My Earth 360 report and lots more on thegreendivas.com, that's greendivas.com, and myearth360.com. And remember to tell truth and shop good at truegoods.com.
The Green Divas love food. Organic, local, fresh, whole, delicious food. Here now is another Green Diva foodie file.
Well, I'm very happy to have back with us for another Green Divas Foodie File segment, Diana Rice, who is the registered dietitian, correct?
Yep.
I just want to make sure I got that right. For Meatless Monday, and today I think you're going to talk to us about making sure we get enough protein in our diet if we do make an adjustment away from meat, right?
Yes, definitely. One of my favorite topics. Because making sure you get enough protein on Meatless Monday, or even if you're a full-time vegetarian, it's even kind of a myth that it's hard to do. It's really easy to do. There are a lot of great meatless sources of protein.
Yeah, and I will just say that I had two experiences with this, and then I won't take up too much time. One was that I had gone for some kind of evaluation health evaluation years ago, and I was a really strict vegetarian back then. And they had this big questionnaire, had to fill out what I ate, and they didn't even get like carrot juice and sprouts and you know, cashew yogurt. They were like, what? So they just looked at me and said, you can't possibly have enough protein. You must be seriously iron and protein deficient. I said, I'm not. And they took my blood and they came back and said, oh, my God, we cannot believe how healthy you are. And I'm like, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's a myth. It's just, you know, we associate meat with protein, right? And we forget that there are other sources of really good sources of protein that maybe, you know, maybe they're like beet legumes are a mix of protein and carbs, but they're the good carbs, you know, the really digestible ones. So that might not be like a big honking piece of protein on your plate, but it is in there. I guarantee you it's in your breakfast,
well,
lunch.
I have a theory that you can may or maybe not dispel, but my theory is that certain plant-based proteins are more digestible and accessible to our bodies, but, you know, call me crazy.
You know, it may depend on your own tolerance, what you're used to.
Yeah.
You know, I know that people who are longtime vegetarians who, for whatever reason, decide to have a bite of meat one time, it doesn't work out for them.
Yeah,
you
right,
know, it causes problems. And that can be just, you know, what your body gets used to, the types of enzymes it's used to producing. So it can really vary from person to person, definitely. But the great thing about meatless sources of protein, and let me just elaborate, we're talking about legumes, nuts, seeds, whole grains, even vegetables.
Yeah.
The great thing about those is that they are packaged naturally with all the other good things that we're supposed to be consuming.
Exactly.
Fiber, complex carbs, vitamins and minerals. And one advantage, you know, of cutting a little bit of meat out of your diet is that you're getting less of all that stuff that meat is packaged with, which is, first of all, too much protein if you're eating a really meat-heavy diet,
right.
But also the saturated fat, the sodium, the preservatives sometimes. What you're trading is all that bad stuff for some really great stuff and some really delicious meatless options.
You know, I was also asked to be on Dr. Oz. They called me and asked if I could make some kind of interesting dessert with a hidden food source in it, and they wanted a hidden source of protein in a dessert. And I was like, huh, weird. Okay. But I ended up making avocado brownies because he wanted to illustrate. He asked me, would I make avocado brownies? I'm like, I didn't even know you could cook avocados.
Sure.
But as it turns out, he wanted to use avocado as one of these surprising plant-based sources of protein that you can put into fun things like brownies. And it worked. He loved my brownies, by the way.
Oh, fantastic. Well, avocado's also got a lot of the healthy fats that
exactly.
we're all trying to get more of.
So exactly.
I'd love to check out that recipe.
Well, it's on the website.
Okay. Yes, definitely.
And so you're going to provide us with some kind of fun recipe or recipes, I'm sure, in your post.
Yes, absolutely. I love the idea of a hidden source of protein. Not that we need to be, you know, sneaking protein.
Diet, right, right.
Some parents do with their kids' vegetables.
Well, it's like a surprise, though. Like you wouldn't expect it. Yeah.
Yeah, something that you don't even think, you don't even know that you're getting protein from. In fact, you know, I'll give you a hint here. Broccoli and leafy greens actually have 3 grams of protein per half cup.
Yeah.
I eat more than that. I eat a whole cup if I'm having broccoli or leafy
greens.
Oh, yeah. And that's 6 grams of protein. That's actually how much protein you'll get in one egg.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's really not difficult, and I just want to get the word out there that if you're going meatless, whether it's full time or whether it's one day a week, you're still going to have plenty of options for getting your protein without protein supplements or anything like that, just from naturally occurring foods.
Well, I'm looking forward to your post because you always have great information. And again, people can find more obviously on meatlessmonday.org or Mondays or Monday.
Meatlessmonday.com.
Thank you.
I think there's a couple different ways.
Okay,
there.
Thank you.
.org might work out for you too.
Well, meatlessmonday.com and obviously on our website, we're going to have something, and I'm sure you'll give us a fun recipe.
Absolutely, I will.
Thanks so much, Diana.
Thank you too. It's great to be here again.
Stay tuned.
Hope you're hungry. For more easy and delicious recipes and even more foodie information, go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.
Being green can be so sexy. Well, at least you can be sexy and keep it green. Check out the Green Divas Eco Sexy Podcast for ways to keep it green in the bedroom or wherever you like to have sex. Wow. Well, this is really extra exciting. I think I say that about all of our segments because I do love them. But this one is really kind of extra special. We're getting to talk today with Brigitte Mars, who is a medical herbalist, author of many books. But what we're really focusing on today is one of her books, well, what information from one of her books, that's The Sexual Herbalist. Did I say that right?
The Sexual Herbal.
The Sexual Herbal, thank you. Because this is the start of our new Green Divas Natural Healthy Sex segment. Yay! I hope I said that right. Anyway, Brigitte, hello.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So I have not gotten my hands on the book yet, but I know that there's lots of different things, and so we hope to do a series of segments on all these various topics. And what should we talk about today?
Well, I think a really good place to start is in the kitchen and our dining table, and it's about what we eat.
And, of course, that conjures up all kinds of fun images for those of us that have sex on our minds.
Absolutely. So it's good to remember that, you know, everything is part of our health. And, you know, we want every aspect of our being to be in good working order. And, you know, many people complain to me that they have low libido. And I look at the food journals, which is something I do with all my clients. And I see that they're eating a lot of devitalized food. So we need to keep in mind that sexual energy is extra energy.
Right.
And if you're exhausted and depleted, libido is the first thing to go.
Oh, yeah.
So there's ways we can eat that can actually help us to have super energy, not only in the workplace, but in the boudoir as well.
Yeah. And why shouldn't we be having, you know, all kinds of extra energy for fun stuff?
Absolutely. And so, you know, when I wrote the book, The Sexual Herbal, I really investigated the traditions of all around the world. And one of the things that comes up a lot, especially in Asian medicine, is that if we want to have healthy libido, it's important to nourish the kidneys. The kidneys are all about mineral balance in the body, and the kidneys govern our sense of hearing, our bones, our teeth, our hair, and sexual vitality.
Okay.
So one way we can do that is by eating more black colored foods. And of course, I don't
really
mean, yeah, I don't mean like, you know, things that are dyed black, but things that are black naturally, they have lots of minerals in them. So things like black chia seeds are one of my favorites.
Okay.
And I don't eat a lot of rice. I eat a high percentage of raw food, but if I, you know, do eat rice, it's always black rice or wild rice.
Right.
And if, you know, if I were to eat beans, I would eat black beans. I also want to turn people on to black quinoa. So it's important to eat a wide variety of colors, but a good place to start, especially when we think about, you know, some good proteinous foods, are these super black foods, which are really high in minerals.
Black sesame seeds, all
yeah.
kinds of. Interesting. So there's some, in the color, there's a different mineral usually in foods that are colored a certain way. They have different mineral makeups, I guess. And so
exactly.
Oh,
and so black has a lot of minerals in it. And, you know, another thing, there's this beautiful philosophy in herbal medicine called the Doctrine of Signatures that says plants tell us what they're good for by the way they look, and by the way they grow. So, for example, you know, blueberries are said to be good for the eyes, and kidney beans are good for the kidneys, and seaweed, which, by the way, is another black food,
is good
for the hair, but also for libido. So I think of nuts and seeds, which contain the germ of life. I mean, if you plant a nut or a seed, it could grow into a plant.
Right, right.
So, you know, sexuality is sort of a trick from the divine to get us to procreate. And, of course, we don't always make love with the intention of procreate.
That is its original intended purpose, right?
Yeah. So, you know, if we eat more nuts and seeds, they're certainly going to contain super nutrients like vitamin E and zinc, which are all important for sexual vitality. And one thing that I'd like to say is that if you were to plant a raw sunflower seed, it would have the life force to grow into a 10-foot-tall plant.
Yeah.
But if you planted a roasted, salted, tamari sunflower seed, it would rot in the ground.
Uh-huh. And
so which one is going to give you super libido?
Right. Obviously the raw, you know, whole, raw, the whole bit.
That's right.
Which, you know, some folks are calling that kind of eating naked eating. So it all naked food, right?
And you know what? The better you feel in your body, the more comfortable you are going to be in, you know, getting naked. You're not going to be hiding under layers. Oh, don't look at me. Turn the lights off. So the healthier we get, the more, you know, glad we are that we can share that radiance with another.
So beautifully put. I'm so excited, and I'm hoping that everybody – and how can people find you? And, of course, there will be a post with your bio and links to everything so they can find the book. But just give us real quick your website.
Okay. It's www.BrigitteMars.com, and that is spelled BrigitteMars.com.
Perfect. Look for Brigitte's post with more information, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks, Brigitte.
Have a super day and many blessings.
Turned on yet? Well, go to thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com. To learn more about this Green Divas Eco Sexy podcast and find other low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. Shopping should be fun, not frightening. That's why True Goods offers a consciously curated selection of non-toxic goods. Find a variety of healthy and natural products for house and home, the kids, and even those furry family members. Also check out the True Goods blog, The Goods, for engaging articles and useful resources. True Goods makes choosing a healthier, safer, cleaner lifestyle easy. Tell truth, shop good at truegoods.com.
Greetings, everyone. This is David Avocado Wolf, nutritionist, author, and chocolatier. And you're listening to The Green Divas. Listen close, tune in, and have the best day ever.
Wait, don't throw that away. Green Divas love to repurpose, upcycle, and reclaim, and keep lots of useful items from going to the landfill. Give it a new life, or just get creative with easy-peasy Green Diva DIY projects. Becky, Becky Streepy!
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so glad to get to talk to you again. Happy summer. And how is little Daryl?
He is great. He's taking a nap right now.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah.
So you have a fun DIY for us today. When we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and then you just reminded me, I was like, yeah, I'm so psyched. I love chalkboards. So tell us what we're going to do.
Sure. So the project that I have for your blog is how to turn a piece of terrible hotel-looking art into a pretty framed kitchen chalkboard.
Awesome.
With some paint.
And elbows. Right. And who doesn't need a chalkboard, like in every room as far as I'm concerned?
Yeah, that's true. You don't have to use this in the kitchen. I just tend to always be kitchen-oriented.
No, I like it. I like it. So tell us how to do it.
Sure. So the first thing you need to do is find your piece of terrible art. I found mine on the side of the road. I was coming home one day and someone had set it out in front of their house for trash pickup. It was awful, hands down. No one is going to think I'm painting over a Monet. So just make sure that what you have is truly awful before you paint over it, because maybe someone would actually like that art that you think is bad.
That is funny. So number one, find terrible art. Okay.
So then it helps if the frame is pretty. It doesn't have to be a pretty color, but it helps if it's a nice texture or like something, even something plain can look nice.
Right.
So the first thing you want to do, I've actually done this a couple of different ways, and I found that what works best is to paint the chalkboard part first And then once that's totally dry, paint the frame. So the first thing you want to do is if there's any kind of, like, plastic seal over the artwork, pull that off.
Right.
And grab your chalkboard paint and go to town. Paint the whole, cover up that whole piece of awful art. Just like with any paint, chalkboard paint, you want to do several thin coats.
Yeah.
Let it dry between coats. And then before you move on, you really want to let it dry for 24 hours because you're going to be putting tape over it.
Right.
And you don't want it, you want it to totally cure. So let it dry overnight. And then cover your chalkboard painted areas with painter's tape.
Yep.
And you want to make sure that the whole thing is covered, not just the edges, because you're going to be using spray paint.
Oh, okay.
Part. You can hand paint the frame if you want. It really depends on the material. If it's something that acrylic paint might not adhere well to, like something sort of slick,
right?
Spray paint is really your best bet. I know spray paint is not the greatest. You can find water-based spray paints like Krylon H2O.
Yeah.
Or you can decide that you want to really go into it and sand and paint by hand.
Yes, God bless those people.
Yes. So it's totally up to you, I guess, how green you want to make this project. So grab your spray paint and go outside. And just like with the chalkboard paint, a bunch of thin coats, just keep spraying until you have a nice even coat and let it dry for about an hour. And when you pull your tape off, you have a magical chalkboard.
Wow.
For the frame, which would be super expensive in the store.
I absolutely have some ugly art I can change over here that's in a closet. I don't know why. It was probably a gift from somebody, and I'm sure I'm insulting somebody, but I won't say who or what. But I've been because it's a gift, I've been carting it around, and it sits in a closet because I just don't have the heart, and I figure I'll use the frame somehow. So here you go.
Yeah, and you'll think about that person every time you use it.
And smile.
Well, I also, at the store the other day, noticed that you can buy tinted chalkboard paint now. So it doesn't have to be black or green. You can go pink for the middle and still write on it.
Well, you know that we have a whole wall of colored chalkboard paint in the Green Diva studio.
Oh, yeah, you do.
And it is one of my favorite things. And when you come up this way someday, and you will, we'll get you in here to play.
That would be super fun.
Well, thank you so much, Becky. I'm looking forward to the post, and I'm going to do this, and I'll take pictures and make sure I send them to you.
Please do. I would love to see it.
Thanks, Becky. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
To get an easy-to-follow tutorial on how to do this fun Green Diva DIY project and many others, go to thegreendivas.com. That's thegreendivas.com. And remember, buy less, make more, and buy local whenever possible. Do you worry about the environment or climate change? Don't feel down. Get busy with the Green Divas and the What You Can Do video series for some super easy ways you can get active. Hi, everybody. I'm excited today to be in the studio, finally, with Jessica Arenella, who is the host, founder, producer...
Creator.
Correct. Okay, creator. I'm like, she's got a lot of hats on for a beautiful young woman who is not as tall, we just discovered, as we thought. But you know what I mean? She's got a lot of hats going there. Anyway, Jessica is going to... this is the first of our series... The Green Divas, What You Can Do. And this series and this particular first few are going to be focused on water.
Yes, I've become the water police.
And well, it's funny because do you know that when we started interviewing, I think the first one was about water?
I'm sure it was because I've become terrified about water.
And rightfully so. But now when I go to do my toothbrush routine, teeth brushing in the morning... I always think of you because I turn off my water in between.
Excellent.
You know
excellent.
What I mean? And I'm like, I'm saving gallons of water.
You
Jessica
are.
Jessica said so.
You are. No, but it's true.
We've been working together on and off for, years, a few years, and it's very exciting to have you here finally and to be doing this series with you.
Thank you. It's always an honor to be here.
So tell us what we're going to talk about when it comes to water today.
Well, water is more than ever on my mind. It is a huge, huge, huge issue in our country. Global water consumption has tripled in the last 50 years, and experts are now projecting that in the United States, the demand for fresh water will exceed the supply by 40% by the year 2030.
Oh, all right. Let's just let that sink
settle.
In, right?
Mm-hmm.
Triple our consumption has tripled since
globally, and in the last 50 years, which makes sense. The population is growing,
right?
But in the United States, our need for water is going to be, we're going to need water. Well, it's going to exceed the supply by 40% by the year 2030.
So there are going to be people who are going to be having trouble getting their hands on water.
Yes. California is in a state of, I'm not sure if they're calling exceptional drought yet, but it's having a severe drought. And 36 of the 50 states are going to be experiencing this year some sort of water shortage.
Well, so that has an impact not only on just basic human survival for those that might actually have trouble getting water for human consumption, but obviously California is one of our primary food producers.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So, yes. So you see what keeps me up at night.
Yeah, that is scary.
It is scary. The good news is, because you know we like to focus on the good news.
Right.
Water is something that you can, in your day-to-day life, you can have a major impact. The average American family, the EPA estimates, uses 400 gallons of water a day.
Wow.
Yes. And I think so much of that water comes from just not putting your attention on how much you're wasting.
Right, right.
So like you said, turning off the tap when you're brushing your teeth morning and night saves 240 of those gallons every month.
Wow. Okay, so that's encouraging.
Very encouraging. This is good news.
And finding different ways to shorten a shower or...
Even taking a minute off of a shower, if you think about that over, say, the course of a month, 2 months, it makes a huge difference in the amount of gallons of water you're saving.
All right. So I think, you know, it's hard because we're conditioned. You turn on the tap, the water's there.
I know.
It comes from the city. It comes from the endless well. You know, it's just in my generation and yours as well, I'm sure, we just don't think about it not being there.
Exactly.
So we just like turn the faucet. I can't stand it. Where was I? I was somewhere yesterday and someone turned on the water faucet and walked away.
I know. I know. It's just.
And I was like, what are you doing? And I ran over there and I turned it off.
I know. I think, again, so much of it is putting your attention on something, just being a little bit more mindful of how we're using water.
Yeah. Okay. So this is a great first segment. And I hope you all will check out what you can do. Is it what you can do?
.com.
.com. Okay. Just checking. Because I know at one point it might have been one but something else, but ignore me. whatyoucando.com. Check out, you know, Jessica has a series of videos. Really quick videos of about what you can do, not only about water, but all kinds of things.
Yes.
Stay tuned. Want more great ideas? Visit whatyoucando.com for hundreds of videos on how you can get active for change. And please go to thegreendivas.com, that's T-H-E, greendivas.com, for tons of low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people, who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Well, I'm very happy today to be talking to Andrew Winston, who is an environmental or sustainable strategist and author of a couple of books, I think more than a couple, Green to Gold, which many people know about, and of course, Big Pivot, which really I do think everybody should have and read and become familiar with the concepts. And even if you're not in the corporate world, you know, shaping sustainable strategies, I think you should be able to talk about this to people who are. Anyway, so that's just my little spiel. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. How glad are, to be here.
And I just want to say that I got to meet Andrew and see Andrew speak in Detroit at a Ford event.
That's right, at the auto show last year.
Yeah, I can never remember because there's been a few of them, and I will say that you do mention Ford in your book as being one of the companies that is really working on this.
Yeah, they. I mean, I have a bunch of different kind of key strategies in the book for where I think companies need to head, and one of them is about, you know, a really critical one is about how we set goals in business and in countries and, you know, even in our own lives, that we have to kind of set them in keeping with the science of in particular, climate change, but other issues, and kind of work back from there. And Ford was one of the first companies to really do that. You know, starting in the mid-2000s, they looked at the climate science and figured out, you know, what that meant for their portfolio of products. Like, you know, they needed to bring carbon emissions per mile down and kind of mapped out a pathway for their product development. And I think you saw one of the repercussions of that or one of the outlets of that in the last auto show where they announced that their Ford F-150 truck would be, I think, 700 pounds lighter.
Lighter, right.
With aluminum. I think that's part of the pathway they set on almost 10 years ago to try to find, you know, technologies and product developments that would lower their impact.
Well, and one of the you highlight signs of the pivot, and what you highlight a statement that they made back in their 2009-2010 sustainability report, and it says by 2050 there will be 9 billion people on the earth. That's B with billion with a B. 75% of whom will live in urban areas. Putting 9 billion people into private automobiles is neither practical nor desirable. And I think, wow, that is really radical for a car company to say, you know, we have to be thinking about these kinds of changes.
Yeah, they wrote that, I think, 5 years ago. I mean, you know, people can criticize big companies about how fast they're really moving, and I'll be pushing them as much as anybody. But there are some, you know, thought leaders, and there are companies that have kind of looked out at the horizon and said, the way we do things just can't continue. And I think they're one of the few to kind of say it out loud in the transportation industry to just realize that as the world becomes more urbanized, I think we're over 50% now if people live in cities, you can't have everybody with a car.
No.
It's just not feasible. Like there's plenty of cities that barely function and it takes hours and hours to drive across them now.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that they were just kind of realizing the reality that it isn't the path forward. So what that means for them, I'm not exactly sure. You know, what is being a sustainable transportation company mean? I'm not sure they've figured it out, but those are the kinds of questions we need to start asking.
Well, I think it's cool that companies like Ford are willing to ask those questions and take a hard look at themselves and what their strategies need to be. You also, another signs of pivot was Alcoa. And the CEO, Klaus Kleinfeld, you say here, he's quoted, at Alcoa, sustainability is defined as using our values to build financial success, environmental excellence, and social responsibility in partnership with all the stakeholders, blah, blah, blah. I don't mean the rest of it's blah, blah, blah. But the most relevant part to me was recognizing really up front that environmental and social responsibility should be a big part of an emission.
Well, just I guess responsibility. I mean, I just talk about the business aspects of it. I mean, yeah, it is. There's moral responsibility, but in a way, you don't even really need that argument in many instances because it's just good for business to take these things into account. I mean, it's just we're dealing with really big changes in the world and with the climate and weather and with resource constraints. Those are kind of the two big issues that I focus on in the book as the mega challenges the planet's facing, you know, rising prices for stuff that goes into our economy. So managing resources well, managing energy well, you know, figuring out a way to give people what they need, the products and services with drastically less stuff and less energy, that's just the path forward for business and will be profitable. And I think Alcoa, you know, what I liked about their statement was that they were saying this was about profitability. They weren't just saying it was the right thing to do.
Right.
Because I, in a way, I find it weird when companies and executives say, we're doing this, you know, it's the right thing to do. I think, imagine in your personal life if you had, you're doing the right thing to do. Like, it's just, it's silly to have to say that. Of course you should do the right thing
right,
to do.
Right, right. That should go without saying.
But you have to figure out what's you know, good for the business, and we'll keep it kind of humming and profitable. And,
well, and just,
my point is managing these issues is now critical to, yes. to the path forward.
Well, I think what you're doing, and I just want to mention to people that Andrew definitely has an understanding, because not only do you have a degree in economics from Princeton, and then you have an MBA from Columbia, then you have another master's. So this is a man who's educated I took like an economics class in high school, and it just was like my head just spun off, you know. So I am really thrilled that there are people like you out there who can explain it and explain it in a way that corporate folks can hear it and incorporate strategies, but also so people like me can understand it and be able to support it, you know. So I found the big pivot really good for me in that way. It's broken down in a way that my little Green Diva mind could grasp. And but, you know, there's just some really some of it seems obvious, but you put it in a way that is I think probably more accessible to corporate folks who are in the strategy positions, like collaborate.
Well, I hope to. Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping to write things that are kind of familiar to business people, written in a way that's like kind of strategy books, like, you know, Jim Collins books, like Good to Great and Great by Choice, and, you know, kind of, you know, easy reads with some important concepts that make you think and kind of think about how you can change and in your business. And that's, I'm trying to take some very tough, there's some tough news out there.
Yeah,
I mean, like, the
yeah.
challenges we face are real and they're getting worse. But I do think we have the capabilities and we have the technologies, and business has the resources to do something.
Well, you know, like so many things, it may be that we hard-headed Americans or hard-headed humans, I don't know, need to be a little bit bludgeoned before we really get it. That, you know, there are significant economic impacts, and certainly businesses are impacted when, you know, storms like Sandy – you know, hit New Jersey and New York. It wasn't just, you know, private citizens who were really harmed. I mean, there were a lot of businesses that
right.
Were not prepared for that kind of weather.
Yeah. I mean, at the macro level, there were some towns that were effectively kind of wiped out.
Yeah.
So clearly it wasn't just people's homes. There were businesses there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
yeah.
kind of obvious. Business is a part of society, and, you know, these kind of systemic risks and challenges threaten business. Kind of, it is kind of obvious to have to say it, but, you know, if people are not in their homes, if they're flooded, if there's drought, they're not buying your stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like they might be buying emergency things, and there's some people selling to them. You know, I've heard some people make the case, oh, construction does well after big storms, but that's a pretty narrow view of economic well-being.
Yeah, I mean,
there's going to be rebuilding, but there's no way that matches the destruction of economic value.
Yeah, my husband,
you know,
my husband,
from these storms.
My husband is in the emergency power generation industry for primarily commercial, and New York City is one of his, you know, New York area is. Anyway, so he does really well whenever there's a big storm or a power outage, but it's a bummer. You know, it's a bummer for everybody else. But
I opened the book with Hurricane Sandy and Con Ed.
Yeah,
you know, losing
yes.
power in the lower part of Manhattan for four
yes.
days because a transponder exploded. You know, like it's just. That's not a resilient system. That's kind of one of the core messages
yeah.
of my work, is that
infrastructure.
We need resilient
yeah.
systems, yeah. right? You need to be strong and ready for ups and downs in life, and the extremes are getting bigger.
Right.
And we don't really have the right systems in place. Right
yeah, we
now,
did
but
not
we can
have
build them.
We did not have power for 5 days. My husband's office didn't have power for 7, and he was someone that needed to be accessible, and it was very challenging. And
it's kind of ironic, isn't it? They didn't have power for his power business.
I know.
But
I know.
That's again, that's systemic risk.
Yeah.
Why there's a benefit to having, your own power, making
yeah.
your own power,
yeah.
storing your own power.
Oh yeah, there's security in that, and certainly, like you said, resilience and being prepared. But I wanted to was something that really struck me that I liked was your chapter 12 on collaborate radically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that, you know, the old corporate mindset was that, you know, it's all about sort of, it's like this warrior mentality of competition. And
right.
I think that now see, doing what I do in the sort of green media, you know, we're all a bunch of hippie collaborators, and I'm just kidding, we're not. But we are. There is a different culture of collaboration among folks that are writing and blogging and doing radio and whatever media. Even though we could be in competition, but I don't know. It's not my mindset. So I love to see that there is the possibility that you open that door, and I think you have examples.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is probably where this book has some differences. I mean, there's lots of differences, but this is one that's a little different from my previous work, which really kind of was highlighting competitive advantage. I mean, there is advantage in all this. I do believe the companies that move the quickest are going to do very well. But some of these issues require real collaboration across lines, you know, with companies with the government, companies with their own customers, and companies with their own competitors. And I use the example in there, kind of my favorite fun one, of Coke and Pepsi working together on refrigerants, on, you know, high global warming potential refrigerants that are used in vending machines around the world. And we need to find new technologies. We need, you know, they need to work with suppliers to try to create new technologies and support the business of those new technologies. And it just was impossible as one company, even as big as, you know, Coca-Cola is.
Right.
So they've been working with Unilever and with Consumer Goods Forum and with Pepsi. And it's amazing because that's, you know, according to Fortune Magazine's article last year on kind of business rivalries, it's the number one rivalry in business history.
Yeah.
And I think it is. But they've realized that there's things you can help each other with and work together that you're really not competing on. That nobody out there is buying soda based on how the drinks are cooled.
Right, right.
So you have to find the things, and I think there's a lot of them that you're not actually competing on.
Right.
That you can work together on.
Common ground.
Yeah.
So you are obviously very busy. You're writing, you're speaking, you're consulting. So I guess clearly companies are open to these concepts. Is there more? Is there a trend, would you say, in companies now stepping? I mean, I think there is, just in the last year or two, there seems to be an uptick in companies recognizing the need for this.
Well, I think there is. I mean, there's been a pretty steady motion, even through the recession, of more companies being accepting of certain parts of this whole kind of greening agenda, in particular like eco-efficiency, you know, saving money.
Yeah.
And that sounds obvious, but that did take decades of people talking about it before all the biggest cost energy saves money. You know, there was kind of this, you joked before about hippies, but there was kind of this feeling, oh, this green stuff is coming from a political place or it's hippies, and, you know.
Right, right.
There's at least an agreement on some parts of the agenda. I think, you know, moving as quickly as we have to on climate change clearly is not all agreed upon.
Right.
The business community is split, you know, politically, and tends to lean right. And that, as we've seen all the statistics, Republicans are less convinced there's a climate problem than Democrats by quite a bit.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a gap there. But, you know, I have seen, and it is anecdotal, it's kind of hard to prove this, but I have seen in my meetings and with top executives and you know, C-level people that there's much less debate than there used to be, and the people that are true kind of deniers of the change that's needed are much quieter and are being kind of pushed down. I mean, really, there's a kind of a change in norms happening, and I liken it in part to, you know, like the discussion on gay marriage or gay rights, where it just has become very quickly not acceptable to have some views in big swaths of the country now.
Yeah.
And the debates aren't over, but in some sense, you know, it kind of is over. And I think with climate change, it's similar. There's still pockets, obviously, of angry denial, but the business community is moving to a place of kind of recognizing there's an issue, because it's harder and harder to deny.
Well,
you know, the two issues I focus on, climate change and resource prices. You can't deny that your, you know, food prices are up a lot, or that cotton costs twice as much, or, you know, if you're in business, you can't deny that. And
right.
and then the connection to weather from some of those resource issues is clear. So, you know, it's kind of like this is all happening now. That's what the science is telling us now. It's not some future scenario.
Right.
So it's getting harder to hold the denial position. Right?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, part of the beauty of who you are and what you do is you come with an academic background and in economics in particular and business. So at least the door opens, and I've met you. You're, you know, really nice, handsome man with in a suit. You know, there's no extra long hair, hippie beard, dreadlocks, none of that. You know, you don't wear sandals. I don't know. Maybe you do in private. But I saw you as a very credible professional individual who can speak to these things very articulately. And I think it's time. So yay that Andrew's out there and you're still writing and talking.
Thank you.
So tell me what's coming up next for you.
Oh, you already want next? I just got my new book out.
Really?
We're already looking for next.
I know. I'm sorry.
I sound like my mother. You know?
I know.
Like,
what's next?
What's next? Well, what's next is to get the book into people's hands.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been out for a month, but it takes months to get kind of ideas out and to have people have time to read it. And so I'm just, you know, I'm going to spend quite a bit of time kind of continuing to do interviews and writing and, you know, writing additional blogs and you know, bylined pieces and just try to get these ideas into business. But I'm also, you know, moving forward with some of my advisory and consulting work and trying to help companies or move companies towards a lot more renewable energy, you know, drastic reductions in carbon quickly. And, you know, help companies continue to kind of make the case to themselves internally and to, you know, their customers and others, you know, that there's a reason to make some of these investments and that we need to go much faster.
Well, it's a big job, and
somebody's got to do it.
Somebody's got to do it. And so let folks know how is the best way, and we'll also put it in the blog relevant to this podcast. But do you want to tell folks how they can find you and find out more about this book?
Sure. I mean, it's pretty easy. I'm at andrewwinston.com. And the book's everywhere. Amazon, it's in Barnes & Noble, it's online.
It is.
It is where it is. So it's kind of everywhere.
Well, it's out there, and we'll do our best to help you get it out there more because it's good stuff. Thanks so much, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll talk again, I hope.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.